This interview with Daryl Grissom was recorded on February 8th, 2022, during the Baltimore Youth Film Arts Workshop, Inside Stories, Perspectives on Incarceration.
I'm from Baltimore, East Baltimore. I grew up in a home with my mother, single parent, and two sisters. And, you know, just lived a normal, had a normal upbringing.
When you say normal, describe that for me.
Just, you know, family, going to school, having friends, playing around outside. As I got older, I guess with not having brothers, kind of like got close to people, older friends in the neighborhood, friends my age, grew up together and, you know, developed a bond with, you know, those people in my immediate community.
Fellows, and we got a bunch of them here. These are our students, Daryl. We call them fellows because they're just above being called regular old students. They are sharp. And so I want any volunteer, whoever comes first. I say, fellas, give the ladies a chance first, and then y'all come in. Let's get some questions in. Come on, rapid fire. Let's get some questions to Mr. Grissom. We really appreciate him being here, so we don't want to waste any of his time. Come on, who's first? A young lady. Regia.
Hello. I'm Regia. And my question is pertaining to prison life and, like, what... So, like, thinking about your knowledge of prison and how it's depicted on television and film, how would you say that differs from the, like, actual experience of being in prison, for your own personal experience?
Well, I think how it's depicted on in movies and things like that and other people's stories, there's a lot of intimidation coming from that perspective. But as far as being incarcerated, for me, the isolation, even though I'm around hundreds of guys at any point in time, you know, just being away from family, just really getting into myself, it felt kind of lonely a lot for me. I took advantage of that loneliness, though. I like learning, so I had a dictionary. It was a deaf guy that was on my tier and wanted to build us for some time. So I learned sign language from him, and I was studying religion and Arabic. So I took advantage of every opportunity that was presented to me to learn, and I even though, again, I was around so many people, I was by myself, and I just took time to do everything I did for myself and prepare myself for when I came back out into society. But the intimidation, the dangerous part of being incarcerated, those elements exist, but not for me. I was quiet. I wasn't easily understood. People kept a distance from me. You know, I was serious, you know, and I was about my business. I wasn't there to make friends and or make enemies. You know, I was, you know, just involved in, you know, mentally, you know, just had my will spinning for the things I wanted to do. I took that time to prepare myself to get back out here, and that's what I did.
Hey, thank you, Daryl. Whoever our next questionnaire is, I want you to ask a question bouncing off something Mr. Grissom just said. You might already have another question in your mind, but now we're like teaching you the skill of really listening in, because he said a couple of things he might be able to expand on. So who's going to be next? Unless Regia had another question, but I want this one to be geared towards something he just said and make it expand a little bit. I'll give you an example. He mentioned intimidation. So I need a question similar to, what did you mean by intimidation? Can you define that a little bit more? So go at it. Who was ever next? Regia, did you have another question? You still there, Regia? Okay.
I have Mark, no further ahead. Questions.
Hello. Hi, my name is Anna. It's nice to meet you. I did have a question. So you said that the intimidation, it wasn't exactly depicted the same as the real experience in prison. Can you kind of explain, was there any time where you felt intimidated personally in prison?
A feeling of being intimidated was when, you know, once I developed the program that I wanted to be on for myself, and when you got outsiders, you know, they're not on your level, they're not on, you know, they don't see what you see, they don't have your vision, they don't know what my plan is, and when they come to you with aggression or not knowing you, thinking you somebody that you're not, you know, it kind of like throws you off because you don't want to step outside of what you're doing to get out or to better yourself, you know, just to address the situation or put a person in that place. But that was tough for me. Other than that, you know, normally you'll have like what's depicted on television, people being tried sexually, people being robbed in jail, people being bullied in jail. You have that as well, but not on a grandiose scale.
Anna, did you have another question?
If she didn't have a question, could I?
Go ahead, Anna. I'm sorry. Go right ahead.
I did have another question. So do you feel like you had certain qualities or strengths that allowed you to kind of keep your head down and stay away from, you know, those bullies, those intimidators and people that were pretty much trying to start problems?
Yeah. I think what worked for me is something pivoting from my childhood with not having brothers, cousins my age, a father in my life. I knew that when situations came to me, I had to fare well. I had to come out with the best outcome possible for myself. So I always had a serious approach towards everything, towards everybody. I never joked and played. I never did a whole lot of that. It took a lot to get a smile out of me. And when you carry yourself like that, people are intrigued. People don't know how to take you. And they distance themselves from you. They don't try you like the happy-go-lucky person. They can read you. I was hard to read. And I knew a lot of people. And just the respect I had from key individuals, it just spread out. And, you know, I just was one of those guys that, you know, just had it kind of easy. Now I was okay.
Fellows.
Thank you.
Correll, yeah. We're going to ask you to hold off for a minute. I want Mark to come up. I think he had his hand up before you, and then we'll get you, man. I want you fellows to remember this. While you're interviewing somebody, there are certain W's that you always want to keep in mind when you're putting a story together. Who, what, where, when, and why. These are things we're going to keep in mind. I just want you to write that down. We'll come back to it later. But on that pad that I asked you all to keep, you got one, Edward? You got something to write that? Who, when, where, what, and why. And the other thing is we're going to talk pre-prison, during prison, and post-prison. All these things we're putting together so that we can help tell Mr. Darrell's story.
All right?
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was saying Mary Lou also had a question as well.
Okay. Let's let Mary Lou come in after Mark and then Correll.
Okay.
Go ahead, Mark. Keep it brief.
All right. Thank you. So my question was, it wasn't anything backing off what you said, but I had a different question. It was, while you were incarcerated, was there anything that you witnessed that sort of made you fear for yourself or anything like that, like seeing somebody else get picked on or something like that, and you wondered if you would be next for any reason?
I saw some horrifying things that happened to other individuals. I don't want to get too graphic, but from what I saw, then thinking whether or not I was somewhere down the line next, or I never thought that. I was prepared for whatever. And in my mind, you know, I was at war, and I was just waiting for it to be brought to me. I was prepared mentally, I was just braced for whatever. And I feel like all those years I spent incarcerated, I could have been braced for something else because I never had to really use anything. If I had a situation, I played basketball a lot. And I had a guy one time say something to use profanity to me, towards me. I don't use profanity. And here, so he said something. So I walked off the basketball court, and then I called him. I said, man, let me holler at you. I wanted to speak to him away from everybody else. I wanted us to go in the room so I can really introduce myself to him and let him know who I was and what I would accept and what I wouldn't. So it took him 8 minutes. I stood on that side, and I counted him. That's been 8 minutes. I'm waiting on you. So he put his head down and came, and I gave him an opportunity to apologize. I got him in that room, and I gave him an opportunity to apologize. He took advantage of the opportunity. We shook hands, and we went and played basketball again.
Anybody else? It's your time. What you got, Edward? No, I'm sorry.
I got a question. My name is Carell. How you doing? I wanted to ask you about being incarcerated, like throughout your whole time being incarcerated, what effect, like my question really was, did you have any character development throughout incarceration? Like, did anything pop out to you and it made you like just see things through a whole different level, like to the point where you just wanted to do better?
Great question.
Yeah, it was a couple things. One of the things was when I first began my incarceration, I had problems with authority. I felt like the correctional officers were like bullies. And you know, when one of them said something that wasn't polite, or when they were kind of abrupt or rude, then I would challenge their authority. I would challenge that authority, which led me to being on what's called self-restriction. When everybody else go out into the yard or go to different, you know, activities in an institution, I was prohibited from doing that. I had to stay, you know, on whatever section I was on. So after enough of that, you know, I realized that, you know, I probably needed to lighten up. Then I just started reading a lot. My mother had a bookstore, so she would send me all kind of books. I did a lot of reading a dictionary. Then I just realized that I needed to change some things. So in order to better myself, I said, well, I'm going to stop smoking cigarettes. So I say, well, I had 4 packs of cigarettes. I kept them 4 packs for like 6 months. After 6 months, I gave them away. I never smoked again. This was 1990. Right after that, I said I wasn't. I stopped using profanity. I said I'm gonna stop cussing. You know, just pushing myself. You know, I got all this time. I can't go back out doing the same things I was doing. They got me in there. I'm not gonna do all this time and go back out there and wind up in a situation. So I just continuously pushed myself and try to learn as much as I can learn. Like I said, sign language, Arabic. I went into the automotive trade, stayed in there 6 years. I was the only one to ever get ASC certified in that institution. And I learned a lot. And I was a teacher of that trade while I still was in there. And I came home and I got shot. Auto shops.
Okay, so right there, somebody, what's the next question? Come on, Edward, ask the next question from the last thing you heard Mr. Darrell say.
What was it like getting out of prison and transitioning back into...
hold on. That's a good question, Edward. But did you hear the last thing Mr. Darrell just said? That he was doing all these good things and then he went home, if I heard it right, and then got shot.
No.
So what's the next question?
Auto shop. No, I'm sorry. I got auto shot from the trade that I had while I was in there.
Well, he you got shot in prison?
No. I went into the automotive repair trade inside the institution. I stayed in there 7 years. I was teaching guys. Once I learned the curriculum, I started teaching other inmates how to fix cars. Then when I came home upon my release, I got my own auto shop. I fixed cars. I'm a mechanic.
And I thought you said. I'm like,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, wait.
Got it. Got it.
I'm like, wait, what's going on? Because I could have sworn I heard a shot.
Yeah, it's these speakerphones. It's only these speakerphones. So go ahead, Edward. Go ahead, man. I didn't mean to interrupt your groove. Go ahead and ask whatever you wanted to ask.
Yeah, no worries.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, so I was just going to ask, like, what was it like when you, like, just got out of prison and were transitioning back into life outside of prison?
Well, the very first memory I have is I was in a transitional situation. I was in a work release program, and they let me out for an interview. And it was wintertime. Everybody had on black army jackets, mid-2000s. And when I went out, got on the bus and went to the interview, did our thing, came back, and I was sweating. And when I went back to the front office to check in, I told the lady that I wasn't going back out there. I said, you can take me off that list until it's time for me to go. I'm not going back. I'm not going back though. I wasn't ready. You know, I was nervous. It just was strange. If I had somebody, I needed to be chaperoned. I needed somebody to come for me. I needed somebody to accompany me. You know, this was strange. And like when I first got off the van to walk to that center that worked with this place, we went to the curb. It was like three or four guys. I looked right, and I looked left, then I looked right. It was like, come on, man. I was like, hold up. Give me a minute. You know what I mean? It's strange to me. I'm out here with no handcuffs on, and I'm ready to go to this other building. So it was just strange. It was weird to me. And I just had to, you know, just put myself at ease and stick to my plan, because I knew I was going to be okay. I knew I was going to be successful. And I knew one of the things, I always told myself that, you know, when I get home, I was going to get me a Benz. I was going to get me a Mercedes-Benz. And so that was my thing, man. Keep doing what you got to do so you can get that Mercedes. Keep doing what you got to do so you can get that Mercedes.
Hey, Daryl, I got a personal question for you. Were there people in the joint who didn't want to see you do good? Because you were, like, basically different. You were rare. You're reading books. You're quiet to yourself. So did you have people who tried to be, like, an obstacle to that?
Yeah, I had people that, you know, that tried to, like, thwart my plans. I ain't talked much to average people. Most of the guys I talked to were guys that had high-profile cases, guys that could play basketball really well, guys that were very respected. So these are the guys that I networked with, you know. And, you know, but you always had somebody that didn't know you or somebody that just didn't care. And, again, you know, for the most part, I would have to basically just, like, separate them from their peers and get them alone. And then I would talk to them, and I would give them an opportunity to, you know, be introduced to me. And once I finished with them, you know, just you know, communicating with them, I was able to get through to them for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Sometimes I guess I smile and quiet, and people look like, you know, people, they got the S on their chest kind of thing, that mentality. And they see a guy that, and why he got all this respect? He ain't this, he ain't that, you know, I'm bigger than him, that kind of thing. And they slept on me a few times, but I was able to check them. You know, just to let them know who I was without bringing them down. Just let them know this ain't what you want. You know. So,
thank you, Luke. Any way you want to, like, kind of? We're not putting everything in synopsis, but do we need to be reeled in anywhere? I know there are a few holes that we haven't finished.
I have a question.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
This is Darshay. How you doing? My name is Darshay. Can you kind of lead us down the road of what led you into prison in the first place?
Yeah, I think, I mean, everything is right along one line with me. And coming from, like, childhood, like I said, not having brothers, not having somebody I can run to if I was in a fight, not had nobody had my back. I think I just developed very serious qualities at a young age. So when I got into a fight, I went all out. And I had a situation with a guy that was, I would say he was a friend. You know, we were cool from the same neighborhood, and we had a situation where something happened, and I shot him. And everybody from the neighborhood said, Daryl didn't have to do that. He ain't had to do that. He could have did. But I ain't know. You know, I just did what I knew to do. You know, I wasn't going to lose the fight. I wasn't going to have anybody walking around saying they did this to me and got away with. Nobody was getting away with anything that they, you know, saw themselves doing to me. What am I going to get away with it? So I had to win. I had to come out on top. I had to be victorious. So I just eliminated all factors of someone having, you know, some kind of advantage on me. So I shot him. He succumbed to his injuries, and I had to go face the music. I had to do what I had to do. And I felt like at that point with my attitude, my temper, I needed that. I embraced that opportunity, you know, to serve that term of imprisonment and learn as much as I can learn and come out and be a better person. I needed that. I needed to work on my temper. I had nobody to talk to about it. I had nobody say, look, man, you handle this in a situation. Losing ain't all that bad. You learn from it. I had none of that. I just wasn't going to lose. Nobody was going to get out on me. It wasn't going to happen. You know, so it cost me a great amount of time out of my life. But being in there, I took advantage of it as much as I was able to.
Okay, so which one of you fellas can step in right now off of what Mr. Darrell just said and just come up with a question? Not your own question that you had preconceived in your mind. Cam, is that you? How do you say it? K-H-A-M, say your name for me, dear.
Cam.
All right, I'll never forget it.
No worries.
From what Mr. Darrell just said, because he said some things. For instance, not having any brothers or sisters. Can you bounce off that theme he was just talking about that kind of led to him going to prison? That's something we didn't talk about earlier. Can you come up with a good question, Cam?
Yeah, I hope so, maybe. Nice to meet you, Darrell. I'm Cam, as he just said. So my question to you is, like you said you didn't have brothers, you were kind of growing up alone. So my follow-up question is, what do you feel like led you to have that mentality that you felt like, you know, the best thing to do right now is just to shoot this guy so I don't lose? Like, what kind of developed that mentality for you?
I think it wasn't there. That what mentality what was created, it had come into effect way before then. I think that the way I carried myself, it was a thing where it was a no-brainer that I was the wrong one, period. I'm talking about from an early age. I didn't joke. And, you know, when you're young, you call each other, you call your friends names and stuff like that. I didn't tolerate it. I didn't play like that. So I guess by that point, it was like everybody knows better. You know when it come to me, do that to everybody else. Just don't ever do it to me. Don't talk to me a certain kind of way. Don't take anything from me. But even with having that person, those qualities, I still was a very, very good friend, a fun individual, a trusted individual, and I wasn't a ticking time bomb that would explode on anybody or everybody. It's just that for whatever situation, I had something for. I had something, you know, I had some retaliation, you know, in me that was bottled up just waiting to, you know, be poured on somebody. So, you know, I I'm saying what I'm saying. I ain't happy about nothing I did. I'm glad I'm where I am in my life. I'm glad I went through what I went through. And I'm glad that I'm still alive. A lot of my friends that had that thorough quality about themselves where people feared them, people respected them, people left when they came around. 90-something percent of them guys not here anymore, you know, and I still feel lonely like I did before prison, during prison, and now I still ain't no brother, you know, but I got friends, but they do their thing, I do my thing, and it's like I challenge that stuff. When I get a customer that comes up here and say, man, my car was doing this, my car wasn't doing that at first, and I'm like, man, I did your brakes, you talking about your engine, yeah, man, well, you could have, I'm saying myself. But on one side of my brain, I'm saying, you know who you're talking to? But on the other side, it's like, man, I've come so far. I'm not going to disappoint myself, my family, all of the people that may be inspired by, you know, story or whatever. I don't have a story, you know, I'm just saying. By my success or whatever I've been doing all these years. I've been home 17 years. I got too much to throw away on a person. So I still be challenged. You know, I'd be pushed up on the wall. I'd be... So what I do now, I just pray. I just ask God to relieve me of this burden, get that away from me, and help me through this. That's what I do now.
Excellent, excellent answers. Cam, did that answer, was that what you were looking for?
Yes and no. I guess my second part of that is, do you feel like you had that mentality because you had no brothers? Like, you feel like you had to just defend yourself. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's what it was. If I got in a fight and I beat somebody up, they would go get their older brother on me. So when their older brother come, I don't have nobody to get. So I'm, you know, I got to be prepared for him when he come or for whatever, or for worse, you know. So that's what it was. But it definitely came from me not having a brother, a cousin my age, or, you know, family members that I was close to, that I could talk to, just like, ain't nobody doing this to me, that kind of thing. In my own head, in my own box, in my own shell, ain't nobody to say, man, look, you'll be all right, man. You can take a loss in there, kind of thing. I ain't had that. So everybody just got what they got for me.
So gang, fellows, from everything that Mr. Grissom has told us so far, is there anything that you can think of that we may have missed that might be a key point? I noticed we talked about before, we talked about during incarceration. Have we talked enough about something that might be missing? So are there any other like open questions anybody might have? Because we're going to start winding down now. Anybody?
Well, hold on, Bo. I would say Mary Lou has been waiting for a while to ask a question. So if we can let her get in there real quick and ask her question.
Thank you. I was being patient. You see all this? I was like, I have so many questions.
All right.
But I noticed since the beginning you started speaking that you mentioned you were a very observant person and very to yourself. So do you think those qualities in yourself made you more prone to be a target, or that it made other people in perspective think that made you vulnerable because of your kindness, because of your aura that you present to other people? Because you said you were very trusted.
I think what it was, I always carried myself to where I was never a target, except for somebody that just didn't have boundaries, somebody didn't know me, or somebody just didn't care. But the sweet side of me, the good side, I mean, I can't fake it. You know, it's me, it's in me. If I have something to give, I can see somebody meet on the corner and it's raining, she got a baby, I'll give her money for a ride, or I'll call one of my, I have a sedan company, I'll call one of my drivers and say, man, pick up, take her home. You know, I like that. I like that. I got I don't know. Some people say I have a good heart. I like to do good, nice things for people. And I'm going to be who I am, and I'm going to protect everything. I'm not going to let people change me, but I'm going to protect myself as well. So if somebody sees something as being a weakness in me, I don't have any problem letting them know, you know, that it's nothing soft about me. You know, I'm just a good person, and I just did something out of the kindness of my heart. But since you know, feel like, you know, it's something here that you want to challenge or want to stand up to, then we won't have to do that. You know what I mean? But I'm gonna do the nice things that's genuinely in me to do.
One thing we missed: how much time did you get initially, and how much did you serve?
I had 30 years. I received a sentence of 30 years, and I did 16 and a half years, and I've been home for 17 years.
Anybody else?
I have a question that was meant to be a follow-up to one of his previous questions, if that's okay.
Sure.
Okay, so earlier you answered my question about what made you fear for yourself, and I had a follow-up, and I wanted to know, you talked about how you prepared yourself mentally. Can you go into specifics about how you mentally prepared yourself while you were incarcerated?
Well, but as far as protecting myself, or
you said you're talking about how you were preparing yourself. You mentally prepared yourself for it if something were to happen. Yes.
Okay. What I meant by that is going into an environment that's foreign to me, an environment where I don't know very many people. It's just totally different from me. I just was prepared to face any situation, whatever it was. The correctional officers, you know, being around guys that, you know, come from very serious backgrounds, I was going to be respected. I wasn't going to be bullied or punked. I wasn't going to be a bully, but I wasn't going to be bullied. I don't know. I just come from good stock. You know, I got a good. I'm kind of firm. I'm tough a little bit. You know, so you know, I can take a punch, but you know, I don't throw that punch at me. You know, kind of thing. So I just had it myself. I wasn't going for anything, and you know, that came out, and it was a cloud around me. You know what I mean? I guess people felt it. People knew it, and you know, I never had those challenges most other people had. I was prepared though to deal with anything, any kind of way. So, you know.
Okay. We got a couple questions left, I'd say, so that we can do something from 7:30 until 8 o'clock once we're done speaking with Mr. Darrell. And I can't say thank you enough, Darrell. We really appreciate this. Thank you.
I thank you.
Now I want two volunteers. I need one guy and one lady to help me on this little drill that we're gonna do. I'm going to throw out a word, and I need you all to form a question, all right, to ask Mr. Grissom regarding, here we go, the word regrets. Can I get two different questions out of that word, regrets, Mr. Grissom? Sure, go ahead, man.
All right, so the word is regret, and I wanted to ask you if you regretted anything when it led you on to being incarcerated. Like, did you regret, like, not being a bigger person like you are now? Or, like, did you regret, like, just going on more of a predator instead of prey side? Like, did you regret just doing anything to anybody throughout after you got incarcerated?
One of the first regrets I had was the guy that I had the situation with. You know, he was the only child, and he was slick. He was a nice dresser, and he was cool. I like this style from a distance. If I see somebody dancing, if I see somebody fly, if I see somebody smart, if I see good qualities in the person, I watch him, and I give him the nod of approval on it. So ain't no hate in me, you know, because I can't do for myself. You know, I can get whatever I want. But I regretted him doing what he did and then me responding the way that I did. I wish I had a list of alternatives that I could have chosen from to, you know, to deal with the situation in a different way. So that's one of my foremost regrets. And then secondly, I regret leaving my family. Having a mother had to come visit me in institutions and stuff like that. You know, we real tight, we still real tight. So I just regret that time, you know, that I had to put her through, you know, to stay connected with me. Those are my, you know, top most regrets.
I had a follow-up question from that. Like, did you ever regret anything within yourself? Because I feel like a lot of things that you've been saying, it's been a lot of things like with, like, not really you battling anybody but yourself. Like, you was going through a lot of stuff with yourself. So is there anything that you, like, I wouldn't say regret, but just realized and, like, I don't know how to
really Let me ask you this. Are you trying to say, Mr. Darrell, have you forgiven yourself? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, yeah.
Okay. Sometimes it just takes a while for all your questions to come together, because
yeah, because I had a lot of questions.
And then you're trying to figure out where you're coming from. But you did good. You know, everything can be like boiled down. So basically, tell me if I'm right. Are you asking, did he have to forgive himself? Is that what I hear?
Yes.
Okay. So just say it. Go ahead and just say it real tight and sharp. Just ask that question.
So did you forgive yourself throughout that whole incarceration before and after?
Very good.
I've forgiven myself. That's why I was able to move on and do a lot of stuff that I was able to accomplish and put under my belt. One thing I do, I write down a lot of things. I call them blueprints. If a thought comes to me, if I wake up in the middle of the night and I have a thought about an invention, I write it down on a piece of paper. If it's something that if I'm in a building, I get all the information on that building and I just put that in my blueprint. Everything I needed for my shop, I wrote this stuff down. Anything you see in my whole shop, I wrote that stuff down on a legal pad while I was incarcerated, while guys was watching movies, playing chess, and doing whatever they was doing. If I wasn't playing basketball, I had to tape to myself and I had the Sunday paper. And I would look at the circle list. I would look at everything I wanted to put in my bathroom, what I was going to get in my kitchen. I was looking at the car section to see what color carpet I was going to get in my Benz or what color Mercedes I wanted, that kind of thing. So once I was able to, like, acknowledge my regrets and then forgive myself, I just had the freedom and the flow to do whatever I wanted to do, and that's what I've been doing.
And whoever the young lady volunteer is, please step up.
Last question. So kind of wrapping up and getting to the point of forgiveness, is there any advice that you would want to give to any young men that may be, you know, headed down that path towards prison?
Yeah, I would say to never feel alone. Always reach out to, if you don't have someone in your immediate environment, in your home, you know, reach out to somebody in your class. You know, get to type somebody else, embrace them. Because now what I do, I see individuals and I say, I told one of the guys I work with, I told him, I said, man, if I had a brother, it would be somebody just like you. You know what I mean? So I make sure that I gravitate towards somebody. I pull them in. I pull them all the way in. That way they have my back. If they see me doing anything that's uncharacteristic of the things that I do, they see it, they acknowledge it, and they bring it to my attention, and they pull me. If I'm setting off to go do something crazy, it don't happen. But if I was to throw something out there, smoke a cigarette, or do something that I just don't do, they will bring it to my attention, and they will put their focus on me and just help me get back to who it is I am. So I would just suggest for younger people to link with somebody, talk until you get it out your system. You know, always take steps to go forward and not to go back. Always think about what penalties you may incur if you take certain actions, you know, and you're going to be tested in life. You know, some days are going to be better than others. So I wasn't patient enough to wait for a good day. I was going to turn a whatever day into a good day. So I would just recommend doing some of those things.
Okay, one bonus question, whoever it is, I promise now. I lied the last time, but this is the last question. I need somebody to ask Mr. Darrell about nowadays. Anybody?
I don't want to be the keep on asking questions. I don't want to be the one that keep on asking questions, but I do got a lot of questions. Like,
okay, unless anybody else, is there anybody else? If nobody else.
I have a random question.
Okay.
I'm kind of curious about your beard. What made you dye it that color?
I'm just always different. You know, I just move differently. And I guess when gray start to come, you know, I don't use black dye. I don't want to cover up. I want to be my age, but I'm 55. You know what I mean? But I just, it's something different, you know? And in religion, the Islam, you were allowed to wear, allowed to use henna, which is a natural color. You know, and it washes out in weeks, but I keep it. It's my color. That's my, you know, it's my trademark.
Oh, it's cool. It looks good. You're rocking it.
Carell, go ahead and ask that last question. Last question of the night. For real, for real. Come on.
So the question is about now and your past 17 years of being free. So my question would just simply be, Do you feel like everything that you've done and like everything that you've been through, do you feel like the success that you have with your business and all of that now, do you feel like everything was worth it?
Start over and get right to your point.
Okay. So
yeah. Having your thoughts.
I was saying after you were free for the past 17 years, do you feel like your success with your businesses and everything that you've been through was worth it? Like, being in jail and then coming out, do you feel everything was just worth it with you?
Yeah, well, I feel like who I am is who I've always been. If you incorporate, you know, growing, changing, elevating, and stuff like that, you know, those qualities. But I'm still the same person. I'm a serious person. I'm just a lot smarter. I'm a lot wiser. I feel like I needed to go through that phase of my life to get to where I am. I feel like it was all worth it. I feel like I did a lot of oppressing. You know, people had to respond to me a certain way. If I say something, if I come in one of my stores and I see stuff out of order, I knock the stuff on the floor and people picking it up, and then I come back, apologize, buy a piece and start playing. And, you know, so sometimes I had to catch myself. But now, you know, I just try to stay grounded, just try to stay humble, try to keep good people around me. I try to have people know who I am and what makes me tick. And that thing where, you know, they breathe when I say breathe kind of thing, I'm not doing that. I'm not oppressing anybody. I want everybody to have every opportunity that I have. I want people to enjoy my company. I want people to learn from me. I want people around me that I can learn from. So, but me going through everything I went through, it, you know, it's for me to now still be alive and to have my story, you know, this is me, and it was all worth it for me. You know, I needed to be in there. I don't feel like I went out of here and this, that, and other. I needed to be in there. I needed to get everything I got, and I got it. When I came out here, I put it to use, and the sky's the limit.
Wow. What a wonderful way, man. Those are some powerful words at the end. The sky is the limit. Daryl, thank you. Thank you so much.
Oh, what's your car company card?
Yeah, I might need your help on that. I might need some work, man. Seriously.
I got y'all on me.
First hold on, what's it? What's it really called though? What's it called?
Five Star Car Care Center, LLC.
Five Star.
Where at, Dale? Where at? I need you.
I'm in Parkville. I'm on Hoffa Road by Valentino, 6205 Hoffa Road.
Dang, for real?
I'm not far from you, really. I got to call you back when we're done. Maybe tomorrow. So I'll definitely call you here. Yeah?
Cool. I got you. Anybody?
Man, look. I got y'all. Is there anybody? Luke, why don't you jump in there, man, and kind of like throw everything in synopsis? Do you think we've covered everything?
Before he goes, I got like a real quick question. Like, what Benz did you end up getting when you got out?
I'm on my 7-1. Now I have the GLE 63 coupe, AMG.
Damn, the AMG.
Yeah. Black on black.
You see that smile on his face? Check him out, Darryl.
That's nice.
He wants one. That's what he wants now.
Look, I'm a Benz guy. Look, everything in here is Mercedes. Everything. Oh. Everything. My hat. Everything. And
right.
This is a reminder. The Benz is significant to me because I was in there. I say, man, ain't much I can do. But when I get out, ain't nothing stop me from doing what I want to do. I'm going to treat myself to a Mercedes. For the aggravation, for the aggravation, for the whatever it was. I don't care how well I handled myself in there, I was going to come home and get me a Mercedes. I had an interview with Jane Miller from Channel 11, investigative reporter. She came to my store, something happened. And one of my friends said, all he talked about, he was going to get that Benz. He was going to get a Benz. He was going to get a Benz. And I told her, I said, when I got my first Benz, I called him. And he looked at my car. He called his mother. He said, no, he told me, he said, yo, you got that Benz. He ain't say you got a Benz. He said, you got that Benz, that one you kept saying you was going to get. So this is my 7-1, and, you know, that's what it is. I'm a Benz guy.
That's real motivation.
You
on, Edward?
You like that kind of stuff?
Say it again.
Edward, that's your kind of talk? You like those high-end cars?
I like cars. I like AMGs. My uncle's got one.
All right. Luke, can you help reel us in, please?
Yeah, I know.
You think have we covered everything you think?
Well, I know Regia had one question for a while now. Do you think you could wrap us up, Regia? You got one more good final question for us?
Yeah, okay, yeah. I think this would be a good wrap-up question. My question was about, so you spent time in prison reading and really taking advantage of your solitude, and that's what I got from it. So I was wondering if some of the things you learned in prison, you talked about how you applied that on the outside. So I guess I was wondering how much of your life now is, like, what are some of the things that you were doing in prison that you still do now? Like, I noticed that you said that, I mean, that, like, you want to be surrounded by people you can learn from and want to be someone that people want to be around. So I'm guessing, my question is more so about, like, what is your relationships with, like, the people around you like? And, like, what are some of the things that you continue to practice that you learn in prison?
Well, the first thing is my shop. I stayed in the auto shop and you know, during my incarceration, like, 7 years. So I keep a shop. I keep an automotive repair shop. You know, that's my thing, you know. I got the best tools. It's just everything I did. And I used to clean up in the jail, in the shop. And I used to ask other guys, did they want to participate in cleaning up? Now, I'm an inmate like they was. So I can't tell them what to do. And I'm not a police, so I can't make them do anything. So a lot of them, they'd be like, nah, man, I ain't cleaning up. So I said, all right, bet. I do it myself. And I knew, because to me, it was practice. I knew I was going to get me a shot. I had to mop that whole floor, wipe all them cords down, wipe the desk down. I was preparing myself for my businesses when I came home. And so that's one of the main things we're doing. And like with my stores, my convenience stores, I have everybody from the neighborhoods on their days off, they won't go home. They don't go to the movies. Everybody just want to keep coming to the stores and we just hang out and you know we're friends. Nobody, I'm like, I want to work my own store sometime, but you know, I got people, everybody standing around, you know, kind of thing. So as much of much fear I'm still in people, as much as I feel like I oppressed people and took the fun out of having, you know, being in people's presence. Man, I just give nothing but good. I just smile and everybody cool, you know.
Go ahead, Luke. No, I mean, that's a great way to end it. I love that comment, and I really appreciate it.
No problem.
Do we do the intro where he says his name and
thank you, Evan. Thank you.
Yes, do you want to go ahead and introduce that, Ebony?
Yes, so we just need you to state your name again, and how old are you, and how long you've been out of prison.
My name is Daryl Grissom. I'm 55 years old, and now I've been home 17, going on 18 years. I told you 18 years for me. I don't plan on going back. Everything I had in there, I've made sure I bought it out. I don't have to go back in there for anything.
Got it. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Y'all need me, call me again.
Daryl, I'm calling you tomorrow.
I got you when you come.
Look, here's the thing, man.
I'm going to call you when I get a car.
Daryl, thank you so much for your time.
If anybody need my number, just call me. Y'all got any further questions, if y'all need to reach out to me, you know, just call me.
Hey, let me let you know what's going on real quick, and then we're going to get out of here. This is the ground level of something different that's never been done before. These types of interviews with you and people we've been talking to since last year who were in the same situation you were in.
Okay.
We hope that down the road, talking to folks like you and then putting all these little sound bites on will help others out of prison. We got visions of doing stuff with the Department of Corrections, especially when you were talking about advice to help guys stay out of prison. All that stuff is going to come useful down the road. So I'm going to be staying in touch with you. I got you in my Rolodex.
Does he have any social medias? Any Instagram?
I don't do the social media thing. I don't, you know, because I think when you live in a certain way and you got nice stuff, you know, people tend to look at it like they get in your business. I'm still quiet. Remember what I said? I'm quiet. I'm private. And I don't want to give that perception that I'm showing off. If you got something real nice, you can be like, look at him with this stuff, man. He got another car. You know, so I don't do that, you know.
Not even a page for your car company?
I think I got Google. you can Google my shop and you can, you know, reach me like that. But Instagram, so Facebook, I ain't that stuff. That's not
my thing. I feel you though.
You know, I just want to be left alone. I don't want people saying, well, he this, and you know, so I do my business stuff. It's enough on Google. If you want to reach me, you know, come bring your car to me. And what I do for fun, you know, that's what I do. I don't, you know, because if I have Instagram or Facebook, it ain't gonna just be all good stuff. I'm gonna have turn off notices on there and bills, late payments, everything. No one see my stuff.
Is his car company, for anybody else that want to know, his car company is in a chat. Like Ebony had put it in a chat.
Thank you. I appreciate that. If anybody need me, give me a call. Don't hesitate.
I'm trying to swallow a piece of cake, man. You got me joking. Look, I'm going to be calling you tomorrow. What time you going to be in the shop?
At the 10.
All right. I'm going to call you. We love you, man. Thanks a whole lot.
Take care. Thank you, everybody.